Hello and welcome to the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM. Each week we discuss all things related to downtown Las Vegas, its rebirth, its failures, successes, and the many interesting people working and living in a part of the city that until very recently was mostly forgotten and shunned by residents, tourists, and government. I'm Joe Shane. I'm a Las Vegas Sun reporter who also writes a regular column in Las Vegas Weekly. You can find me in both publications and online under the heading of Joe Downtown. If you have ideas for future shows, send me an email at joe.downtown@lasvegassun.com or at my Twitter account at joedowntownlv. Now, as you listen, you may hear the tinkle of silverware or the bustle of people and laughter in the background. That's because we taped the show at the Beat Coffee House right out in front of the pane glass windows in the Emergency Arts Building at 6th and Fremont Streets. So let's get to the show. If last week's interview with Josh Ellis did anything, it demonstrated that some Las Vegans have concerns about the way development happens downtown. Criticisms vary, of course. Some say the meek and the poor are being pushed out to make way for development. Ellis wondered about the utility of some of the apps and websites supported with downtown project money. Are they for everyone, or are these apps and websites just for the benefit of the well-to-do? Now, looking out the pane glass window of the Beat right now, I'm struck by what I see. I see a man holding a clipboard and glasses. He's wearing a polo shirt, dark pants, loafers. I see an elderly woman walking across the street, an SUV, several cars, a group of young people following, all with clipboards, looking like they're on their way to doing something. The reason I'm describing this is I've lived downtown for 16 years. Some of you may have known from my weekly column that I was mugged down here just a block away 4 or 5 years ago. What I'm saying, again, is you would never have seen this, I bet, even a year ago. I remember a year and a half ago watching a man getting mugged kitty corner from here. Even on a sunny Sunday morning, you wouldn't find these people walking here. Downtown Project's efforts to redevelop the area, too, have made national, even international news. That's all well and good, but if you really want to see what they've done and what the city's efforts have done to change things, you have to look at it through the eyes of those who have benefited. One of those people, and my first guest, is Sean Swanson. Sean is 25. He's a Caltech master's degree recipient in chemical engineering. He also grew up in Las Vegas. His dad was a locksmith. His mom worked at Jerry's Nugget. That's right, Jerry's Nugget. So he's old school Vegas. I mean, his dad was a locksmith. That doesn't mean he was working for the mob or anything, although those days are gone, and he's too young to have parents, I think, of that era. They're obviously very proud of what he's doing and his education, but truth be known, for the last 2.5 years since he's been here, he's struggled. He's struggled to make a living. First of all, Sean, let's talk about that. Your experience, you live in what's called Startup House. First of all, tell me what Startup House is. What Startup Block is. A lot of people think that's a weird thing for Vegas. I think it's weird.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I like it, though. It's just a couple of houses we have in the downtown neighborhood that are really kind of oriented toward entrepreneurs. So we figured out ways to reduce rent. So it's burn rate's really long for entrepreneurs. We figured out, you know, we do a lot of communal activities. We're just pretty tight-knit community and are all just trying to help each other with our various ventures.
So this is the way I imagine it. You're all sitting around naked working on your computers.
Basically.
Let me think of that figuratively. You're sitting around, you're open to each other, though. You're open to ideas, and you're there definitely around the other people of like minds, even though you're working on different projects, so that if you have a problem, you can just turn to somebody who might have a little better acumen in a certain computer, I'll just use the word computer, computer area, and you can ask them, how would you do this? That kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a really supportive environment. Like, it running or, you know, trying to launch a startup and successfully grow a business is really hard. And if you don't have a support network, it's pretty much impossible.
Now, you grew up in Vegas, so do you find it as odd as I do that that kind of thing even exists in Las Vegas?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like most people who grew up here, when you want to leave as soon as you can because there's nothing to do here when you're younger. And so when I was 18, I was like, I'm out. And I just went all the way to the other side of the country for college. And they do a really good job of retaining you here, actually financially, like incentivizing you to stay here. And I was just like, blew it all off. I was like, I have to get out of here. And I left, and I actually had no intention of coming back, except when some friends of mine who worked on ALU and pulled me into ALU were
ALU
telling me.
ALU is a what?
Oh, well, it's a kind of a defunct startup now, but it was a couple of things. It started off as like a website that was more like a forum replacement, and then it evolved into a mobile app that was more of an events, like a discovery tool and an event organizer tool. It pivoted all over the place. But
you can hear the wonderful sirens in the background. we really are downtown. Okay, keep going. Oh yeah, but okay, so they pulled you back. How? Did they promise you riches?
No. I have a fondness for the city, and everybody. I think a lot of people do. Even though I was like, I'm getting out of here. I'm never coming back. There's still something like being away from here made me really long for being here, and so it wasn't that hard to actually convince me to come back. And in Downtown Project, like I've criticized Downtown Project in the past, and I still have criticisms, but they are absolutely an amazing catalyst. They have rocked the catalyst like role. And
let me ask you this really quick. You know people beyond the bounds of Las Vegas in the tech world. Mm-hmm. Do those people think the same?
Absolutely. Like we'll get into it a little bit. But I, you know, the job that I'm working at right now, I'm really happy with, is, you know, it just came about within the last month, and it is a job with a firm that was in SF. That's a tech firm that moved here.
San Francisco's SF.
Yeah.
And they moved there. They are getting funding from Vegas Tech Fund, which is a Downtown Project venture capitalist arm for tech groups that have to benefit the community here in some way. Mm. So what is their business, or what is their app to do?
They have a really great idea. They basically, there's a process that's already happening right now where fashion brands, or a lot of brands, not just fashion, but they're niching into fashion. Fashion brands are reaching out to fashion bloggers, and they have a relationship going where, you know, if the brand is supported by the blogger, then they'll usually support that, or they'll do like a sponsored post in exchange for something.
And they will pay that blogger?
Right.
So can you trust what the bloggers say?
I think so. I mean, I think they have to, even by law. I'm pretty sure I just learned this the other day, that there's something you have to do by law that says this is a sponsored post.
Okay.
But that's a very common relationship, and it's very hard to do right now. It's very messy, and the brands involved, I think it's messy for them, and the bloggers, it's not consistent.
So they're sending an email to somebody saying, hey, would you want to do, it's
more of a platform. It's more like, the goal is, I think, brands go on, they ask, you know, what they want out of, you know, a blogger's activity related to their brand, and then you just link them up to the right bloggers and have them, you know, grow together.
Okay, so what will your thing do?
So I actually got hired on, this is the first time I could find this job here in the last, you know, 2.5 years, which is exciting for me, but I am helping them with machine learning. And machine learning is...
Is this robotics or something?
I mean, kind of. It's robotics in the sense that it's software robotics, I guess. Like, it's you have basically artificial intelligence, like algorithms, and generally just algorithms in general. You have data, you have information processing, and then you have actions that, like a program, or would you be like a software robot, would do based on that information. And so you basically you're trying to teach a program to run based given information and to kind of learn on the fly.
Wow, that's and I guess I kind of want to ask this, because I have no understanding of how or anything that works, but you actually know how to do this stuff.
I've been picking up the last 2 years, so I'm thankfully, I have this opportunity now that I can grow with and really cut my teeth because I was doing it all by books.
So what's
going to
happen
stuff,
when you're done with this is that this app will streamline the process between brands and bloggers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I think in and of itself is a great idea, and I think it's going to work.
sounds like it. The one of the co-founders made a presentation about it the other night and mentioned several big companies who are interested in it. So I hope it works. Now, this is fairly recently. You just got this job.
Yeah, I literally got it probably like last week, and it was literally a day or two process of me noticing, like somebody by word of mouth told me, hey, like I know you're into this. There's like this job here, and I was like, what? And I hit him up instantly, and like it was just really fast, you know.
Now, I want to go back. So that fits our theme for the show. But for what's happening downtown, you wouldn't have that job. You would still be doing what you were doing. And describe a little bit to people how you were making ends meet.
Sure. I mean, my main skill is math, and that's kind of hard to monetize, I guess, in a pretty depressed economy. Those jobs just tend to evaporate. And I was basically a sellsword. Like an academic sellsword, kind of. Like I would do, you know, really interesting, I guess, like under the table kind of stuff, where I'd teach, you know, people's kids for cash. And I did this one thing, or I still do them, where you'd have the homeschooling community kind of gather around, and we'll do like history of math like sessions for like an hour and a half. You know, it's like $15 a head or something like that. And I'd just get paid that way, and I'd survive, or I'd find a little bit, you know, tiny little bit of contract work where I could with you know, some math consulting or some, you know, algorithmic consulting.
Who needs consulting in Las Vegas for that kind of thing?
Nobody really yet, but it's growing, and that's why, like, I think this is good evidence. This job that I have now is, like, there are firms now that are starting to appreciate that and are starting to.
What's interesting is that you've also thrown yourself into community, the community, I should say. You were like one of the main people, you and David Anderson, spearheading the online effort to raise funds for the Huntridge Theater revitalization. That effort raised more than $200,000 from Indiegogo, which is stunning. I think David said it might be one of five successful campaigns to raise more than $100,000.
I think it might have been just in the community category, because I think they definitely had some that raised like $1 million or something like that. But yeah, isn't that interesting though? Like, in the community category of Indiegogo, that's kind of an indicator of how young crowdfunding is. Like, you know, raising $200,000 for a theater in the whole world is like number five.
I was completely blown away by that, because again, nobody thinks of Las Vegas either as a place where techies are going to go, but especially as community. When I first moved downtown, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we thought we were doing community because we emailed each other and told each other about stuff. But really, social media has really brought out this sort of community strain. And then, like I said, you spearheaded it. I've seen you over at the Huntridge painting and working on stuff. It's heartening. It's unusual. And I think it helped you. I mean, it's helped you in some way.
It hasn't been, you know, anything direct, but that's not really why I did it.
You didn't do it to get a job, but no, maybe it may have helped you.
It's so important. I mean, the Huntridge is a pretty, like, I could talk about that for a while, but I think it's something that the city really needs right now. And so I am still willing to, you know, drop as much time as is necessary to make sure that project, is going, and it's going well right now. So it's, yeah, I don't even really have to touch it right now. There's a lot of great people working on it.
So you and David and some other people lived in Startup House, which is on Franklin down by 6th Street. And I was there once for a meeting. You're talking about how you guys basically live on pizza. I mean, it wasn't quite Animal House, but I mean, you know, you definitely wouldn't eat off the floor there. It's unique for Vegas. It reminded me of like a college town, which I've never thought of Las Vegas as, which was really gratifying in a way to see.
Yeah.
I think you guys have started something that is going to propel. And again, that has probably started a lot from the redevelopment downtown. You wouldn't be here right now.
Oh, absolutely. I am absolutely here because of the revitalization process that Downtown Project kicked off. Like I was saying before, they rocked the catalyst role. That is why I'm here. In a larger sense, like, why I'm here is...
Can the tech thing happen here? When Tony Hsieh announced this Downtown Project and the Vegas Tech Fund, people were saying that the possibility of it really taking off here was little to none, because there aren't a lot of people with a tech background in Las Vegas.
I think it is happening right now. Like, just over the course of this past month, there's been several companies move here from SF, and they're bringing engineers. Like, the one I'm working with right now, The Shelf, they've hired a really brilliant software engineer who moved to join them here. And that, if more of that happens, then we're going to have a lot of great talent. It'll come.
It's inspiring. I'm going to sign off now, Sean. The time's getting away from us. I'm Joe Shane. I'm a Las Vegas Sun reporter who also writes a regular column in Las Vegas Weekly. This is the Joe Downtown Show, and we've been talking to Sean Swanson, a local, I'll just call him a tech guru, who just recently landed a great job, in large part because of the redevelopment. Well, probably and only because of the redevelopment that's occurring downtown, and he believes downtown has a great tech future, and I wanted to get into some more of that, but maybe we'll have you back on again sometime, Sean.
Sure, anytime.
All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Downtown's ongoing redevelopment didn't create a new job for Sean Anderson, but it might have made his job more interesting. Anderson is the captain of Metro Police's Downtown Area Command. It's an area bound by the highway west and north, and Sahara Avenue and roughly eastern to the south and east, if that makes any sense. It's one of the smallest area commands geographically, but it packs a punch, at least for police. Check any week on Metro's crime mapper, and the majority of the deceptively colored dots indicating criminal activity are in the downtown area. Now, that's not so new. Downtown, which includes some of the oldest and, by definition, poorest areas, has always been home to crime. And Anderson might say, crime these days is decreasing, at least in areas where the light of redevelopment is shining through. Criminals tend to stay away from areas that become home to people with places to go and things to do. But Anderson's job isn't just about crime. It's changed logistically because of the redevelopment. And it's changed to a certain degree politically. Let's talk about that. Welcome, Sean.
Good morning.
So just a little background so people can get a sense of where you came from, who you are. Tell me, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Colorado, and I came out here in 1989 specifically for this job.
Now, you're a young man of 30-something.
Well, yeah, actually, I'm 27.
What did you do before?
College student.
And what did you study?
In criminal justice and sociology.
Oh, at what university?
I went to Metro State College in Denver.
And so you came here 90. So you've been with Metro 24 years?
Just turned 24.
And what are some of the areas that you've been in?
I've worked just about everywhere. I worked our resident program when I first hired on, narcotics, intelligence, joint terrorism task force, and gangs.
Now, if you went to college for criminal justice, what's it called, criminology,
mm-hmm.
Does that mean this is something you've always dreamed of doing?
You know, I've been interested in this, I think, ever since I was a little kid.
Do you know why? I mean, what got that bug in you?
I watched Miami Vice at a formative age.
Don't you wish you could wear those suits with the T-shirts underneath?
I still got them. They'll come back in style.
I've talked to you many times over the months, and I've said to you that you seem like a pretty calm guy. You're not the kind of police officer, to put it bluntly, that people would get a bad feeling about. You listen. You talk with intelligence. But can you give me an idea of where that comes from, meaning your personal philosophy on policing?
Well, yeah. I think that my philosophy is probably where this department has been moving towards over the course of the last decade, really. And that's to be we've talked about community-based policing forever.
Yes.
But I think that we're at a point now in this agency that we're living those words. So it's not just a talking point. Mm-hmm. It's really an overarching philosophy on how we do our job day to day. And if you're going to police a community and community police, it's communication is step one.
Were you picked for downtown because of how you do things? Where were you before this?
I was working in our intelligence-led policing unit.
So how did you land this job? And by land job, I mean he's an officer, but they have different area commands in Metro. Downtown Area Command is a specific area, and he's the captain of it. So how did you end here?
We had a captain of 37 years on the department that retired and moved on to do other things, and they needed somebody to fill his spot, and that's where I landed.
I mean, they must have seen something in you. Did they tell you, yeah, you're really good at, whatever?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm not sure it was that planned.
Okay. Now, the demeanor that you have that I talked about before, how does that play a part, or does it help you? I mean, have you noticed the way people interact with you to your benefit, that it comes about because of the way you are with them? I mean, like I said, you have a calm personality. I mean, have you noticed people react well to you downtown, or have you changed? Have you adapted to how people are here? What's
a difficult question? I think that there are a lot of stereotypes that still apply to this job and the type of people that do it. And you know, it doesn't take long, I think, to break through that barrier. And you know, once you chat with people for a couple minutes, and in the case of most people downtown, I've been down here for 9 months. And I know most people down here, you know, they're involved in the community and involved in business by name. And so it's been my style's a little bit different than my predecessors.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Now, you've been here 24 years. You know as well as I do, downtown was sort of forgotten and left to whoever had the guts to walk the streets during the day or night, but it's changing. And give me your sense of the change. You and I have talked a little bit about this over the months, and what you like, what you're seeing.
I worked here downtown in 2007. I came here for a very short stint. And what we've seen is, it's really just a displacement, I suppose, in that it used to be an area that was well known for prostitution and narcotics trafficking. And here at 6th and Fremont, there were not really any very productive businesses, right?
Right.
And now we
maybe not taxable.
No, now we're sitting in the Beat Coffee Shop. Across from us is a Commonwealth. On the other side of that is La Comida. So it's changed a bunch. You don't see nearly the level of criminal activity that we had seen even 2 or 3 years ago. It's really become an entertainment district, which was, I think, what they envisioned when they started down this path.
So how has it changed the kind of job you you do. Police are known to react and, you know, they want to prevent crime, but few police that I know have gotten the sort of public media attention that you have. I mean, you're in the media, I wouldn't say a lot, but some of the, some officers just do not like it. The thing is, you're good at it, and have you ever had that kind of media focus before? I mean, what's that been like for you?
It's new to me, certainly. Most of the jobs I had before were not anything that encouraged media.
Yeah, I don't imagine working intelligence. No. We were out talking about where you're going to go undercover that night.
No, mostly in the opposite direction. But it's we've tried, and you know, we've demonstrated again and again that we try to get ahead of things before they become problems. We've done that on First Friday, and we continue to have conversations with everybody down here. You know, you can spot something before it's about to go bad. I mean, there's a common sense approach to things. And if you put the proper things in place, and it's not just the police, it's the business, it's the community, you put proper things in place to prevent those things from happening, everybody benefits in the end.
Well, let me play devil's advocate. It sounds like Minority Report, the movie where Tom Cruise tried to prevent murders before they happen. How do you know something is going to go bad? I mean, how could you tell like 4 or 5 months ago that on First Fridays down here, it was a sort of a powder keg?
Every time we have a big event like that, we debrief it. And we talk about the things that occurred, and we try to find ways to do things better the next time. So it's just a maturation of the process. If you see something brewing on one First Friday, or the first Friday of the month, I guess, or the first Friday after party, you know the chances are if it's brewing one Friday, it's just going to get worse the next Friday, and then get worse the next Friday. So you just step in and put things in place that don't allow those things to grow and make it a safer environment for everybody.
For those who don't know what First Friday is, First Friday is the Art Walk, which is about a mile to the southwest of here. Let's say it's the First Friday after party. When it ends, Fremont Street, at least this first block where there are 8 bars and plus 4 bar restaurants, has become packed with people. And, I mean, it's almost an uncontrollable number of people in the last, I'd say, 4 months ago. But this past Friday was completely different. Tell me a little bit about that. You had very few arrests.
Very few arrests. We last month we had put in place some pedestrian rail on Fremont East. We knew that type of scenario works on Las Vegas Boulevard during the New Year's Eve event. And the crowds downtown on First Friday were rivaling the size of what we see down here on New Year's Eve. So we just plug and played with what was a prior enforcement strategy that worked. Threw them down here, and we had some opportunity to, you know, kind of manage the crowds, make sure they didn't become uncontrollable.
And you didn't just unilaterally do this. Obviously, you had many meetings with businesses, people concerned about it. I mean, this isn't something you just came in and did.
No, absolutely not. We meet with the Fremont East Entertainment District, a group of business owners and citizens downtown, and over the course of the last 5 or 6 months, we've tried a whole bunch of different ideas on what to do downtown, and this was one of those ideas, and this has been by far the most effective idea, was a pedestrian rail.
So that's going to stay in place. Well, what about on Friday night, you also did something different on the Fremont Street Experience. And for those listening, the Fremont Street Experience is the traditional Fremont Street you may know of. It's where the Horseshoe, I think it's still called the Horseshoe, and the Golden Nugget, and those casinos are, and they're all under this electrified canopy, which is a giant
billboard.
Yeah. And last Friday night, they fenced it in the way they do on New Year's Eve, which had never been done before beyond New Year's Eve. So do you think that'll continue? And what are your feelings about that? It seemed to work pretty well, where you had almost 80 arrests there a month ago. You had maybe a dozen.
Yeah, I think we were down to 19 arrests in the last first Friday of the month. It was effective. But, you know, there are a lot of things that were in operation that night, too. It was cold. It was windy. We also had the Bike Fest. So you don't know how all of those things interact with one another, that in combination with what we did on Fremont East last month. But the crowds were down, certainly. It was a much different feel under the canopy this time than it was on the last first Friday of the month. Will we do it again? Like most things we do down here, we're still talking about what we want to do at the end of this month. That'll be a decision that we'll come to with the Fremont Street Experience, the city of Las Vegas, and the police department.
Do you like this? I mean...
Oh, yes.
I mean, do you like the job? You have to go to these meetings, endless meetings. You're not out there, you know, doing real... I mean, I don't say real police work. I know management's a real part of... That came out wrong. Let me just say, I'm just saying, I wonder... you know, if going from the street to this, or, you know, I guess it's a gradual process where you get into management. I just personally, I think it'd be.
Well, most of us come to this job with a genuine want to make a difference and to help people. And down here, I feel that the people that I work with in my station are making a huge difference downtown. So it's rewarding. I'm having a blast.
Now, we're on the radio here. I've interviewed you for some stories. Do the brass ever come down upon you and say, God, you know, if you want to get in the paper, get the sheriff in. He needs the publicity, not you.
No, nobody
ever says. I mean, do they give you any tips, or they just, they're fine? What you're doing is fine.
No, this is really where we need to be in my role. You need to be actively involved in the community, and the media is a big part of that. It's nice for us to be able to get the message out. And open communication, you know, transparency is a huge thing right now. And this is a step in the right direction, right?
I think so. Fremont Street itself, East Fremont, is changing greatly. When the container park opens, I think it's going to be mid-November now. The redevelopment is going to be pushed down about two more blocks. It's going to spread out that Friday night crowd as well. I think everything's moving toward where the Atomic Bar is.
Right.
And there's going to be, over the next 2 years, just a lot of development. Now, when I lived in Madison back in Wisconsin, it wasn't uncommon to see officers walking down State Street, the most popular stretch of street in the city, which is about the length of Fremont from Las Vegas Boulevard to Maryland Parkway here. Beyond just giving people comfort of seeing an officer there in case something happened, I think it diminished the distance between police and the citizens. Police had no trouble with, when there was an incident, asking people for help. I wonder if someday we're going to see the day when we see police officers walking a beat on what is arguably about to become one of the most walkable streets in Las Vegas, Fremont.
I think you're seeing them already. We've got people out here on bicycles. We increase the number of people on bicycles as the population here has grown. And we've got officers on graveyard and swing shift that pretty routinely get out of their cars and walk from Main down to 7th, 8th, 9th Street. It's pretty common. And it makes sense. Two or three years ago, there wasn't the compression of people that there was downtown. When City Hall let employees out at 5 o'clock, then everybody, you know, it was pretty quiet. Now people are down here, you know, all day and into the wee morning hours. So yep. It makes sense for us to put people, you know, our cops where people are.
We're at the beat right now, and I'm just looking out the window. I'm seeing some kid walking his bike. These are people that I'm, because I've been here for a long time, you would not have seen.
That wasn't like this 2 years ago, was it?
Not even close.
Not even close.
Sean, Captain Anderson, it's been awesome talking to you. Thank you for coming on. I hope we can have you on again sometime.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. This has been the Joe Downtown Show on KUNV 91.5 FM, The Source. We've been talking to Captain Sean Anderson and coding maven Sean Swanson about how their jobs have changed and jobs that were developed because of the redevelopment downtown. Thanks for listening.